It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Crusher Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, but can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. The reason I asked, because I was sitting here and I was looking, I was pulling up a couple of things, and I little thing down the corner says, microphone not detected.
Oh, no.
And I went, oh, no. So I unplugged it and plugged it back in, the little thing went away, so I don't know what happened. That's why I was wondering if you could hear me. So,
yeah. Good thing, this would not be a, well, this would be a popular show, but it wouldn't be good in the beginning part until we get this.
You're right. So, again, thank you, bus people. Beautiful day here in Florida.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we have a guest tonight getting the show started from Pennsylvania, and which is cool because we're still on Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a big wine state, and I guess I can go, what time is it? I guess I can go get the our wine guest now.
Yeah. No reason not. Just go ahead and grab Todd. We got Todd from Briar Valley Vineyards and Winery. So Mike's going to go and pull Todd in with us, and we'll get him on the air and see if we can't find out some about it. We've been trying to connect with Todd over the last couple of weeks or so, but we've had this problem, that problem, this problem. He was going to come on, and then with the holiday weekend, last weekend, it threw us off because he had plans for the Thursday night. And then we finally get him on the air, which I'm looking forward to here. We've talked a couple times, but glad we're finally getting him on the air and getting a chance to talk with him for a little bit. He is, looks like he's almost ready to come on with us here, so we'll get him here in just a minute. He is from Briar Valley Vineyards and Winery in Pennsylvania, and I'll just let him tell you more than, maybe not. Looks like he might be having a problem there, so I will talk a little bit more before we bring him on. We have, before I forget, anyone out there listening to this program on archives, on live, on anything, shoot me an email. Let me know that you're out there. Let me know what you think of the program. We get lots of listeners on archives and on live. We have a lot of listeners, and over the year, it's a tremendous amount. It's amazing how many people do listen to the program. We love it. Thank you very much for listening to the program. But let me know. Let me know what you think of the program. Let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve it, make it easier and better for you out there. You can always email me at allaboutwine101. @gmail.com, and let me know what you think of it, and let me know if there's anything that we could improve, or anything you don't like, or any suggestions for programs or anything like that. We'd love to hear from you. just to let you know that you're there and you're enjoying the program, and that, you know, we just, again, like we say over and over again, we're trying to make wine less intimidating and more friendly, and we hope that we're doing that. We hope that we're teaching you some stuff and sharing some stuff with you. I have learned a lot on this program about what's happening with wines in this country and about what's happening with wineries. It is just amazing. I am so thrilled about what's going on with wines in this country. It helps everybody, and it's fantastic. And the program, it just, every week I tend to learn something new and something exciting that is happening with wines. So if you're listening, archives, live, whatever, get in touch with me. Let us know what's going on, what you think of the program, what's going on out there. Having troubles with Todd here for some reason. We can't seem to get connected on the first number that he gave us. We're trying the second one here, and maybe we can get him through on this one. So if we don't fill up the program tonight with Todd, and he's able to talk as long as he wants, we got some information I want to pass on to you. Found a neat little article about sake. We talked about sake way back. Oh, geez, 3 years ago, I think, something like that, when we were talking about wineries around the world, and we talked about Japan and what they're doing there, and their wine basically is sake. That's about the extent of the wines that they do that at, and some flower wines. And so we got an article here on sake that I want to talk about a little bit here. If we do have the time. So let's see what's going on here with I don't know. I guess Mike will let me know if and when it's ready to bring him on. Looks like they're having some connection problems for some reason. I don't think there's any weather, any storms or anything up in that area. Also found a neat little article on the article is entitled Big Shot Reds. This is, name dropping when it comes to wines. There's a lot of big names out there, celebrity wineries. If you have money, that's a good way to invest it into wines. And an interesting little article here that I found called Big Shot Reds. This is a article about different celebrities, and it just picks out a specific wine for each of these celebrities and tells about them, all that. But we got people like Dave Matthews of Dave Matthews Band that has a winery, Francis Ford Coppola. Everyone's pretty much familiar with him. Emilio Estevez, the actor, has a owner of a winery, as is Maynard James Keenan, who is the frontman and Tool. Excuse me. And he's an owner. Speaking of owners of wineries, Drew Bledsoe, Pro Bowl quarterback, and as is Tom Seaver, a Hall of Fame baseball pitcher. So we'll talk about those also. And another interesting article on Rieslings. Everyone seems to enjoy Rieslings. They are such a diversified wine. It is such a great wine to be able to enjoy just about any style anyway. And I've got a nice little article here on Rieslings we will cover, if not this week, over the next couple of weeks. Looks like we might have Todd with us. It seems to be that they had some difficulties, but it looks like he's with us. So I'm going to bring you on in here, Todd.
Very good.
Hello.
Good evening, Ron. How are you?
I'm doing well. But there was a little problem there, it seemed, for a while.
Well, I think we got it worked out.
I hope so. I certainly hope so. Although, it seems like some of the best programs as far as listeners go is the ones where we had audio problems. So.
Oh, well, I guess everybody knows it's live then and not pre-recorded in the studio somewhere.
That's right. That's right. So, welcome to the program. Glad I finally got
you
on.
Thank you very much.
Briar Valley Vineyards and Winery.
Yes.
Tell us about it. Fill us in. What is it all about and everything?
Oh, well, Briar Valley Vineyard and Winery is in Bedford, Pennsylvania. Our first vineyard is in a valley called Briar Valley, so that kind of is where the name came from. It's in Bedford County, Pennsylvania, south central, about 100 miles east of Pittsburgh. Pretty much, if you look on a map, you'll see a huge geographical area called Nowhere, and points to pretty much the center of it, and that's where we're at.
Center of Nowhere.
Yeah,
Nowhere,
middle of
PA.
Nowhere. Yep, that's it. But we have two vineyard sites now. We have one. The first one was planted in 2006, more or less like a learning vineyard, and oh my word, have we learned. Learned every mistake we could make. And we planted a second vineyard last spring down in Everett, Pennsylvania, which is about 8 miles away from here, on the farm that I grew up on. We decided to keep it as a working farm. My brother and I have it, and all four of us are working in the vineyard rather than subdivide it and split it up. We decided to keep it a working farm and put 10,000 vines on it.
10,000?
Yes, 10,000 vines.
And,
yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. It's kind of interesting, though, to work the fields that we know that our father did back in 1950. He had an old H, and now we have a big new Kubota, but it's kind of fun knowing that we're keeping the tradition going. Now, back in the 50s, when my parents bought the farm, they bought it to raise quarter horses.
Oh.
And now we're growing grapevines, and I jokingly laugh a lot that we have the safer venture. Horses kick, but grapevines don't. But I would say that they're a lot more work than horses, I guess. But it is kind of interesting, too. Back in the 50s, when my parents bought the farm, they had different choices of farms to buy. And back in those days, the farms were based on and valued on how fertile the soil was.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some farms in our area that are very fertile for farming, and just being a couple kids, they really couldn't afford that. And they wanted to raise quarter horses, so they didn't really need fertile soil. So they got a farm that had poor soil. Wow, 60 years later, we're grateful the soil was very poor. A lot of slate and a lot of shale, perfect for grapes.
There you go. So that is your soil, slate and shale.
Yes, it is. Very well drained. Very little loam, and we're hoping to really control a lot of vigor that way.
The 10,000 grapes, that's a lot of grapes. So when did y'all decide to make a vineyard and a winery as opposed to any other ventures like continue to raise quarter horses?
Well, pretty much when I got in high school, I was thinking, I don't want anything to do with horses. You know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
If you were raised with it, you really don't want to do it in adulthood. When we kind of decided, my wife and I vacation a lot up in the Finger Lakes, and we just fell in love with the grapevines and the vineyards. We did. They're just beautiful, and we both grew up on farms. She was raised on a dairy farm, and her grandfather raised grapes, a lot of grapes, and he sold them. And we just thought, you know what, this is going to be a nice project for us. We'll have a vineyard, and it'll give us something to do in retirement, and we can keep busy and active into our mid-hundreds.
Yeah.
Well, we're busy and active. We're not quite in our mid-hundreds yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the winery kind of came out of the love of the vineyards.
And the brothers decided to join you because they didn't have anything else to do, or did you bribe them or threaten them, or what happened?
Blackmailed.
Blackmailed, yeah. Okay.
No, just joking on that. They're both quite busy. They're both professionals, and they were just looking for some more meaning in life, too. And truthfully, when you get your fingers back into the soil, back into the grapes, that puts a lot of meaning back in life. It puts things in perspective.
Yeah, to till the land. But I'll tell you, you know, you mentioned that horses and grapes, but the thing is, horses aren't going to freeze and die if the temperature drops down to 20 below, though. So that's, you know.
Yeah, you're right there. But I also remember
there.
As a young boy growing up, hearing the barbed wire and the wire fence creak from a horse trying to bolt through the fence, and my parents running to get the horses out of the fence. So everything in agriculture has its risks.
It does. It does.
But you're right. Horses don't freeze.
They don't freeze, and I'll tell you in that area. Well, I don't know. It's just we talked to other people in Pennsylvania, and they're saying that it's just been so mild there. Are you located in an area that I noticed you are located in southern Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's
central
correct.
Central southern. So,
right.
Are you getting an influence from the Baltimore, the Chesapeake Bay, and all that stuff?
No, we're a little too far away from Baltimore to get the influence of that. But we have had an extremely, extremely mild winter this year. And the season is probably 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule. We have flowering trees coming out now that typically, well, they're about 3 or 4 weeks early on the trees. And we're having a very early bud break. So we're all a little bit nervous this year. But so far, the vines are fine. We did some pruning practices this winter that retarded the bud break, which has been a big help. A lot of our vines are still with bud swell. They're not bud break yet, but we have some in bud break.
Mm-hmm. What is normal? You say about 3 weeks in advance. So normal bud breaks like the first, second week of May?
May, correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we can get a frost up until the first, second week in May.
Right.
So we're pretty far ahead of schedule.
But let's hope the weather holds out. I mean, it's just...
I hope so.
And it's not just you. It's all over. So warm that we're getting bud break all over. And it's something everyone's keeping their fingers crossed.
Yeah. And you know what?
10,000 plants. What are they?
Oh, the plants?
Yeah.
We have planted... let's see, I start at the top of the vineyard and head down. Chardonnay, Riesling, and the new vineyard we put in Pinot Gris and Viognier, and we have Gewürztraminer, Lemberger, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and the new vineyard we put in Petit Verdot to give a nice Bordeaux blend.
Wow. Gewürz has been able to grow there?
Yes.
You hope?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've done quite well in our first vineyard.
Oh. Wow.
I think we're in somewhat of a microclimate, right, where we're at. We're at the base of a mountain, and it seems to pull the warm temperatures here. I know it seems and sounds a little strange, but last year with the hurricanes coming up the coast, the numbers we were getting out of our vineyard were actually better than a lot of numbers from Virginia, the Finger Lakes, Lake Erie. So we're pretty excited about those numbers.
Hmm. So, wow. Microclimates are so important. I've spent a lot of time talking about those in different programs and to different people, too.
Okay.
So your influence is the mountain, and is there a body of water? I noticed there's a little lake, but obviously not big enough to really cause a major influence. But
correct.
Rivers or anything?
We have a pond at our first vineyard, but nothing to really cause that much of an effect. We'll see in a spring frost or in the fall, you can see a lot of fog coming up and helping it. But I don't think it's really big enough to really cause any effect on the climate.
So it's just more than anything, it's just the mountain or the hill or whatever you want to call it there.
Yes.
We would call it a mountain. You might call it a hill.
Well, probably so. It's a little flatter in Florida, isn't it?
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah, somewhat. I think our highest elevation is like 600 feet in the whole state.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, the mountain I'm talking about that we're probably 20 miles away from is around 2,300 feet.
Wow.
And our elevation right here is 1,200. So low in relationship to the mountain, but we're high enough to get some nice nice elevation to the on our vineyard.
Well, we talked a little bit about temperature. Let's continue. What is your normal, and I know this year has been rather warm, your normal lows in the winter and your normal highs in the summer and your evenings in the summer?
Okay. The normal for the seasons up here is probably as cold as we'll get is around zero. If it says 2 degrees, 3 degrees below zero, we're all getting a camera to take a picture of the thermometer. But we do hill up our vines, and you probably don't have that practice down there.
No.
But if you have below 6 degrees below zero, the graft could freeze. So we hill up and unhill every spring, and we do that as a matter of our practice every year. And it does protect. And in the summertime, when we're getting up to 90 degrees, we're pretty much in a heat wave. 90, 95 is as hot as it gets, very rarely up to 100.
Oh. And then your summer lows at night drop down to what?
Maybe 60. 60s would be my guess, and I'm guessing because I don't have a feeling for that. I would say 60s, 70s.
So it's it's a good temperature to be growing these Cabernet Francs, and
it is.
Some of the ones you mentioned there. Yeah, that's great. The I'm still trying to picture your microclimate and influence besides just that mountain. It seems that there should be more influence, and I don't know why, but I
agree.
Just
seems like I can't explain it.
You know, it's odd that mountain. And I mean, you mentioned the mountain, and I immediately thought within, you know, your front yard, you can go out and see this mountain, and obviously it's not that close. And
right. No, it's not that close. But a lot of the storms that come in would come in from the west. And if you've ever heard of Somerset, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the mountain there at Somerset pretty much stops the cold weather, and a lot of the bad inclement weather stops. And that's why Somerset is so famous, because it likes to collect all that bad weather and snow. Keep it to themselves.
Yeah, like Erie. Yeah.
Yeah,
like
pretty
Erie
much
or
like,
Buffalo, either one of those.
Yeah, exactly. So the mountain just stops the bad weather. And why the temperatures are temperate, I can't explain that.
Yeah, and that's just it's interesting to me how that affects it there. Back to your grapes. You all the ones you mentioned here, are you making varietals out of each one? Are you going?
Yes,
are you blending, or are you don't know, or what?
Good questions. All our wines are varietals, except we have one Bordeaux blend.
Ah. And so all the ones you've planted just recently,
yes.
Those are all going to be all varietals then?
Correct. Except for the Petit Verdot. We'll put that into our blend.
Okay. Now, since we're starting on the wines, let's talk about your wines.
Okay.
I got your website up, and I'm looking at that. That's why
All right.
I can do it here. Your Limburger, that is, you're growing that there?
Yes, we are. Actually, we're pruning it. We're pruning our first vineyard site right now, the Limburger, and it's a very interesting grape to grow. It almost knows what it has to do. It trains itself pretty much, but it does tend to be a bit vigorous. We have it on 3309 rootstock to cut back the vigor, and in a little bit more vigorous sites, it likes to grow. It's a little stubborn to prune right now, so that's what we're working through today.
Yeah. You mentioned something just then now that I'm a little curious about, too. You said you have it on a certain rootstock to cut back on the vigor.
Yes.
Will your rootstock help control the vigor of the vine?
Oh, my, yes. Yeah. We have two up in this area that's most commonly used, 3309 and 10114, and they both will reduce vigor in vines, and that's pretty much standard. I don't know about New York State. Well, there's a lot of New York State that's on those two rootstocks, and in Virginia as well, to cut back on the vigor.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. The ones I use here are hybrid rootstocks, and so it's not something
Interesting.
It's University of Florida hybrid rootstocks I'm using.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you have pretty sandy soil, so vigor wouldn't be a problem for you, I assume.
No, it isn't. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's why I was curious when you mentioned cutting back on the vigor. The proprietor's red. That's your blend?
Yes, it is.
And is you all of your reds here, are you oaking them and are
Yes. Good question. All the reds are fermented in oak and aged in oak, and we're using all French oak barrels. We're not using any Hungarian or American oak. And right now, this year, we're aging it for 18 months, and we're soon going to be stepping up to 24 months aging in barrels before we bottle.
Wow.
And all our wines are fermented dry, which is a little different too. And that's kind of what we're focusing on, dry European-style vinifera wines.
Now, you mentioned something there that we're staying with French oak, not American European. Why were you so adamant about French? I mean, I know it's good and all that good stuff, but there are some good American oak out there that's given some unique flavors and taste. Not just Pennsylvania, but Texas and Missouri and Minnesota. Why
French?
Why
We've
French?
Not experimented with a lot of different American oaks. It might be something that would be fun to do sometime on a test barrel. But what we're finding with the American that we did try in the beginnings, with the larger open grain of the American oak, you do get a lot more oak tannins leaching into the wines, which gives it different flavors.
Oh, yeah.
The French oak has very, very tight grained. It will change the complexity of the wine, but it won't get the bitter oak tannins into the wine. And that's kind of the flavors that we like. And that's just what we're using.
I see. So it's just a matter of arriving at the flavors you want, not so much just, you know, a prejudice against American oak.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're right. it would be a lot easier and nicer to use American, even from an economic standpoint.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So much more expensive. But that's the flavors we kind of like, what we fell in love with. And so far it's working well. Now, the white, of course, that we would oak would be the Chardonnay. The other whites were all stainless steel, fermenting and aging in stainless. However, we did do one barrel of, I think, Pinot Gris this year in a three-year-old oak barrel just to add some mouthfeel to it and blend it back in. But for the most part, all the whites are stainless.
Uh-huh. Stainless is expensive. It's always interesting. Everybody's still staying with stainless, and yet the expense of stainless is outrageous compared to what they're doing with plastic now. And
yeah, I know. We've never used plastic, and I hear there's some success with it. I would just be a little leery, and maybe you could help me with this. I'm afraid you get some flavors, some esters soaking in the plastic, and you might not get clean flavors the following year unless you would dedicate plastic to one varietal. What's your experience with that?
No problems at all.
Really?
Plastic now has become so advanced and so phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I've talked to other wineries that around the country that have used that are using plastic, and they swear by it. They're not having any leaching problems. It's just the quality has jumped right on up there and is comparable to stainless steel, with a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the weight and everything else. Some great results from plastic is going on. So that's why every once in a while I'll talk to someone and they'll say plastic, and I'm always amazed and happy that it is. I'm an advocate of plastic myself now. And as they improve it, I first started checking to it about 4 years or no more than that now. Wow, it's been 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of plastic has just really went way past its timeline that you would normally expect for something like that to take to get to where it's good.
Well, let me ask you a question about plastic, if I may.
Sure.
You know, and I know. I don't know how many of your listeners will know this, but when you try to cold stabilize wines, the wine will throw a lot of tartrate crystals.
Right.
And really stick to the sides of the vessel. Stainless steel, if you get a real polished, a mirror polished finish, is a lot easier to clean. You can use a steam jenny. You can use pressure washers. How do you clean a plastic tank that the wine's thrown a lot of tartrate crystals?
The new plastic, you're able to clean it as well as you can stainless steel.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. They've gotten to the point where it is, they've got it smoothed out, and it's just like a stainless steel type finish almost.
That's amazing.
Again, the new plastic, it's taken them, you know, a few years to get to the point where it's just to that, but it's just a phenomenal advance in plastics now.
Wow. Well,
in fact, that's a good idea. I need to make a note. I need to get somebody who does plastic barrels on the program.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah. Because there's manufacturers, there's a couple dozen of them around the world. And I think they're in North America alone. I think there's like 8 or 10 of them. So.
Wow. That would be huge. Because your glass of stainless is just really, really ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. When we first opened, I was checking the price of stainless, and it was like $2 and a quarter a gallon. So if you get yourself a 1,000-gallon tank, it would be like $2,000. Then you add your door and your different things, which would be a little bit extra. Now it's like $6.50 a gallon. It's absurd what has happened to the price of stainless steel.
Yeah, it really is.
And so that's why I'm hearing these different wineries are talking and doing plastic now, because stainless steel has just priced themselves out of people's pockets. It's gotten outrageous.
Right.
Excuse me. So you go stainless steel and oak for the reds. I noticed your Cabernet Franc. I love a Cabernet Franc.
Thank you. I do too. It's one of my favorites.
One of my favorites, without a doubt. One of my favorites.
Nice.
And it's really sad that I don't see more of them on the shelves.
I agree. A lot of people that come into our tasting room aren't familiar with Cabernet Franc. And it's a wonderful grape. It's an ancient grape, and it has just such great flavors to it.
It's blended so much, though. That's why people aren't familiar with it.
Well, that's true.
You know, I mean, they don't understand that they're drinking a lot.
Yeah. But it is a wonderful grape. And if I can touch on the pruning of Cab Franc, I love to prune Cab Franc also. They're a vine that kind of knows what to do also. They're so hardy. They're resilient. They're not overly vigorous. The canes are just perfect size. And I love Cab Franc all around.
Yeah, I always have. I fell in love with Cabernet Franc out in California way back in, early 70s.
Could you tell me, I've not had a lot of Cab Francs from California. I like, you know, European, East Coast. I love East Coast. How would you describe a West Coast Cab Franc? Does it get a tad flabby?
No, not at all. I just, okay. In fact, I have to tell you a quick story here.
Okay.
We're supposed to be interviewing you, not me. But I have a quick
story. Okay. I'm not a part of the radio union. Oh, dear.
Yeah, neither are we.
Back,
they had, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's called Taste of Napa. And it's group of 100, 120 wineries from Napa that travel around to different places, and they present their wines. It's very expensive to get in. It's like $120 for a four-hour tasting. You go around to the tables and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, wow, we were talking too. Remember that, how time gets away from us? It's the same thing with the years. But 6 years ago, because we were a winery, we got ourselves free tickets to this Taste of Napa that was being held down at the Raymond James Stadium where the Tampa Bay Bucks play. Right. And so we were able to go and attend that. And there was this one winemaker from Napa, and I apologized to him because I can't remember his name. Mm-hmm. I went up and I asked him what he had, and he had his typical cabs and different things like that that you always find from Napa. And I said, you know, it's really sad that Napa doesn't really make as much Cabernet Franc as they used to. I said, years ago, it used to be a very popular grape. He goes, you like Cab Franc? And I said, I love Cab Franc. So he reaches under the table and he pulls out and he says, this is mine. He says, this is usually for my family and friends and stuff. He says, always bring a bottle with me whenever I travel, or a couple bottles so I can have it. He says, here, try this. Oh, my, that was so good. It was the classic Cabernet Franc that I remember from California for years ago. A lot of depth, a lot of flavor, a lot of aroma, not flabby. He brought the taste out, but it was still sitting at about 14.5% alcohol. But it wasn't hot. It wasn't as boom of alcohol in your mouth. It was just very balanced. He did such a beautiful job on this wine. It was gorgeous. And this is the type of Cabernet Franc that I remember from California from a number of years ago.
But that's interesting, though. He had to keep it under the counter.
He kept it under the counter, yeah.
Interesting.
And, I asked him, I said, can we buy that? And he goes, no. He says, only make, like, what did he say, like 60, 70 cases a year just for himself and friends. But it was the classic Cabernet Franc that I fell in love with many years ago. It was just absolutely gorgeous Cabernet Franc. And it was a good example. And to answer your question now after everything, it was a good example of the California Cabernet Francs that the reason I fell in love with Cabernet Franc, because it was this depth of flavors and taste. It had a nose that, I mean, I could spend hours before my first sip just smelling it. It was such a beautiful nose.
Oh, that's Cab Franc.
Yeah, that's Cab Franc. You know? And it's not Cabernet Sauvignon, no. And this is what
that's
people,
right.
They look for, when they say Cabernet Franc, so many people look for Cabernet Sauvignon. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a different grape, and it's going to give you different flavors and aromas and stuff.
Yeah.
And like you described in your description here, but the cherries, the leather, that type of earthiness that comes out in the Cabernet Francs. This is why I fell in love with it. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous grape and a gorgeous wine.
And I should divert from just for a second another funny story. When we were doing the tastings to come up with the flavor descriptors for on the tasting sheet, we tasted and smelled the tobacco. And I said, oh, my, we cannot just say tobacco. We don't want people to think it's an unfiltered Camel. It's more like a fine imported cigar rather than a Camel. No insult to people who like Camels, but I wouldn't want to drink that.
No.
But you're right. It's just so rich in tobacco, leather, earth, dirt, humus. But on the other end, you can get a lot of candy, a lot of perfumes, a lot of fruit smell. It's a great varietal.
It is. I can wax poetic about the Cabernet Franc for hours. Actually, I would. But so.
How nice is that? Have you ever tried a Limburger?
No. And
oh my!
That's why I was asking about the Limburger. I've never tried a Limburger.
Limburger is a very nice grape, and it's a German grape, Austria. It's called Blaufränkisch. You may have heard it by that.
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
It's the exact same grape.
Oh.
It's light in tannins, kind of similar weight-wise to a Pinot Noir. The clusters are a lot larger than a Pinot Noir cluster. They're not tight like a Pinot Noir. They're very big clusters. Again, back to the flavors. Light in tannins, and it has a lot of black pepper in the front, which is kind of nice.
Wow, light sometimes.
Black pepper. As you continue to work it back to the finish, it really gets a lot of black fruits in the finish.
Huh.
So it is just a very distinctive flavor, a lot of complex esters in the nose, in the flavors, and it goes with a lot of foods that a heavier red could not. We've had it with Thanksgiving turkey. Enough oil there that the tannins can cut through it, but it doesn't overpower the turkey. So it's really a versatile red wine.
I've never had it. You describe there. Are you familiar with Carmenere?
Somewhat. I'm not an expert by any means.
Okay, Carmenere, a great grape, just a wonderful grape. Originally started in the Bordeaux region of France, pretty much died off during the Phylloxera killings there, but it survived in Chile. For years and years, they didn't think they had it there. It was mixed in with the plantings of the Merlot, thought it was Merlot, and Chile was being praised for its unique Merlot flavors and taste.
I imagine they would have been.
Yeah. Everybody going, wow, it must be the soil. It must be, the mountains.
Oh,
it must
no.
be, you know. And then, there's three stories I've heard about how it was discovered. Whatever story you want to believe, whatever one you don't want to believe, it makes no difference. The point being, it was discovered that it wasn't Merlot. It was the Carmenere grape.
Wow.
And I was told by a person who is from Chile that once you know what to look for, the edge of the Carmenere grape has a slight little yellowish tinge all around it, whereas the Merlot does not. And if
the
you
grape
know
or the leaf? The leaf.
The leaf.
Okay.
The leaf. And
really?
So if you look at the leaf, you can tell the difference. Well, when your winery guards, I take it.
And they're playing.
But the Carmenere, they divided up and they came out with a Carmenere out of Chile there. I love the Carmenere. But the one thing about the Carmenere that I find that is just everyone I've had, mm-hmm. I shouldn't say everyone. I've had about 12, 15 Carmeneres, and there's been two or three of them that were lacking. But almost every Carmenere I've had has that pepperiness to it, that peppery nose, peppery that just sort of goes into the taste. And you just described that on the Limburger, and that was interesting.
That is interesting.
You brought that up because the Carmenere, I love that pepperiness that it comes out and jumps out at the nose. And it's a classic black pepper. I mean, it's not...
It's kind of interesting, too, is the Limburger ages in the bottle. As it gets a couple of 3 years, the black pepper will subdue. And the black cherry in the finish will just really come forward.
Wow.
So I tend to like it when it's a little younger because I do like that edgy black pepper. But it does change flavor profiles as it ages in a bottle.
Well, I'm going to have to look and see if I can see any Limburger in any of the wine stores around here. Try yourself a Carmenere. If you like that pepper, pick up a Carmenere.
I will.
And they're rather inexpensive. I mean, if you're paying any more than $20 for it, it's almost too much.
Okay.
They should be around $15 or so. But I really enjoyed the Carmenere, too. It quickly became, once I discovered it, one of my favorite reds.
Aren't wines just wonderful?
Yes.
A lot of people just look and see a little round grape, but... Every grape has a different flavor. It has a different nose. It goes with different foods. And you can just go on for hours and days and weeks and years exploring and actually having fun with it.
And having fun with it.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing about it. There's so much to it. That's what this program's about, too, trying to get people to taste that, trying to make it less intimidating for them, get out there and try wines, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. So many people come in our tasting room, and they see the varietals, and they say, well, what makes a wine good? And I don't know if I could tell a good wine if I had. And I just look at them, and I always say, if you like the wine, it's good. If you don't, it's not good for you. It's not complicated. It's not intimidating. Try it. If you like it, it's wonderful.
I tell people there are two types of wines in the world, the type you like and the type you don't like.
Ah, very good. Right.
And that's it. Everything else after that's puff. But the puff is what makes it so much fun.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yes, that really is. Your Riesling. Let's get back. We sidetracked ourselves a little bit there. Your Riesling, is it a dry, sweet? What style?
It's a dry wine. It's a dry wine. Incidentally, the 2010 Riesling, about 2 weeks ago, we just got notice the International Eastern Competition, that Riesling earned a double gold.
Fantastic.
Best of class. We were very excited about that.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We had a judge on the program a couple of weeks ago who talked about what judging was all about and how they did it and all that. So
that would be a very good show to listen to. I might have to look that up online.
I
thought that would be extremely difficult.
From what they have to go through, it is. It was a very interesting program. I never talked to a judge in detail like that. And so a double gold after listening to that judge, that is quite impressive there.
Thank you.
That's very good. Congratulations. The Riesling, so many people come into the winery and say, I love a Riesling. And I'm always telling them, you can have very dry Rieslings and some of the sweetest wines in the world are Rieslings. To say you like a Riesling is like saying you like a hamburger. It's just
true.
And so that's why your dry Riesling is at the other end that most people really aren't that familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So
now it's interesting though. A lot of people will come in and say they like, of course, the sweeter wines. They have a sweeter palate, and when they try the dry Riesling, they don't realize that it's a dry Riesling because it's very fruit forward. It's not astringent, and it's very pleasing to the palate. So I think a lot of people confuse sweetness with a nice, clean, fruit-forward wine, too.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Your wine is carried at the Wooden Angel. That's the judge is the owner of the Wooden Angel in Beaver.
Yes. That's the judge you interviewed.
Yes.
Alex. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Yes.
We'll be actually seeing Alex. This is Thursday, Saturday night. He always hosts a fundraiser every other year for the hospital out there.
Fantastic.
A huge wine event, so we'll be pouring at that.
Oh, yeah. Alex was our judge that we interviewed.
Oh, how about that? He's quite a gentleman.
Yes, he is. It was a great interview. We had, in fact, one of the a young lady that used to work for him and waited tables and has now moved on in her life was the one that suggested it. Great suggestion, by the way, by her. And Alex was very accommodating. It was a great interview. I've never interviewed a judge, and so that was really, really interesting.
Good experience. He's well qualified. He has an amazing nose and palate. It is just astounding. And he's quite a gentleman, too. That would have been a good interview.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very interesting and quite pleasant. What was that? I know. My wife, I referred to her as my engineer during the program, just said you can listen to it on archives, and you just did say you're going to have to check that out. So.
Yeah, I will.
You will. When did the winery open? I forgot to ask you that back when we were talking about wineries.
It opened in 2007.
Oh, so.
And actually, it's kind of interesting. Since 2007, we've been entering, of course, competitions, mostly national and international. We're up over 150 medals at this point.
Wow.
I know a lot of people get medals, and a lot of the marketing gurus say medals aren't important, but I kind of like medals. They let you know you're doing an okay job.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, congratulations. And a lot of times people will put on their website, this is a triple winner or stuff like that. You don't have that. You really should brag a little bit.
Well, maybe we should. And I should tell you probably why. My wife is the winemaker, and she has an exceptional nose and palate also. But she's the consummate introvert. Doesn't really like to, tout our own horn so much. I'm not so embarrassed about that, so maybe we will address that.
Yeah, just, with, among each wine, you do have your award section here, but you need to put it by each wine that is one that you're selling.
That's a good suggestion.
I always find that people like to know that, if the wine has won an award or not. Let's see. Are you in an AVA there, or just Pennsylvania?
No, we're in the Alleghenies and Her Ladies. I believe that's the name of it. It's not a real tight organization. Pennsylvania's a little behind with the Appalachians.
Well, they got two or three of them, I think, that when I first introduced Pennsylvania, I talked a little bit about AVAs, but they're like bleed over into the borders of other parts and all that stuff, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, I should feel kind of good. Right before when we did our first planting, the region that we were going to be in, they changed the name to the Southern Alleghenies and Her Ladies. Originally, it was called the Groundhog District, which I'm kind of glad they changed the name. I can't imagine putting groundhog on the label. That's okay. It would have been fun.
Well, people know that groundhog in Pennsylvania, and everybody can understand that, though. So
that's true. Punxsutawney Phil.
Yes. I mean, come Groundhog Day, everyone looks to Pennsylvania to see what's going to happen, as if they don't already know, but still.
Yeah. Although a big problem we have in our vineyards up here are groundhogs, so we're not real pleased.
We're not at one
with the groundhogs. They do cause problems. They make very deep holes. Tractor wheels get out in them. It makes a problem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can understand why you would. Other people say, "Oh, how cute," and you go, "Oh, I'll get those." Yeah.
Of course, I remember when I was a kid, referring back to the horse farm story. When we were riding horses, we were never allowed to canter the horses through the fields.
Yeah.
Because we never knew where there was a groundhog hole. Uh-huh. But put his foot down the groundhog hole, it could break a leg pretty easily.
It's like wineries you talk to in Kansas and stuff, the prairie dog problems, same thing there, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, you're right.
Yeah. You have state stores there.
Yes.
Is your wine sold in state stores? I understand the rules are changing, too.
They've been changing for the past half a hundred years. They've never quite changed, but it's getting close to changing. We're not in the state stores.
You're not?
No, we're not.
Oh.
We're not. We choose not to participate in the system. It's rather restrictive, and there's some issues with it that we just don't get involved with. So pretty much we sell out of our tasting room. We do sell over the Internet, or people can call, and we do ship within the state. Some states we can ship to out of the state. I have to check the ship compliance laws on which states we can ship to. And we can sell direct to restaurants, which we do a fair amount of that. But we're not in the state store system.
The new law, I think, that just freethegrapes.org is I follow that quite closely because it usually keeps up on all the laws. And it just said that Pennsylvania, the wine laws of Pennsylvania, allowed you to a little bit more open selling instead of having to go directly to the state stores. A little bit more freedom. So
I'll have to check that out. Freethegrape.com.
Org. Right.
Org. Okay.
Freethegrapes.org.
Org. Okay, I'll read that.
Good site. It really is. It keeps you up to date on what's going on in the country and stuff like that. And so,
nice.
It really is an interesting site. Federal government, local government.
Mm-hmm.
You love them, hate them, want to kill them, want to hug them. What?
On which topic?
On wines,
in general. Wine.
No, this is all about wine. Don't get me started on government.
Okay, good. My palms can stop sweating then.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find the TTB, LCB very friendly, very nice to work with. I have not had any bad experiences with them.
Wow.
That might sound a little strange. I'm sure a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Basically, if they say they need it this way, that's okay with me. We do it the proper way. If they come to inspect, everything's always in order, and I've never had an issue. When I have a question or a problem, I have a list of numbers I call, and they're all very nice, and they get me any answer I need. It's strange, I know, but that's been my experience.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's how they're supposed to be.
Yeah, you're right. I would have assumed, if people have an attitude or call expecting problems, it's a somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They get that back. But I just expect it to be positive, and it always is.
Good.
Yeah, no issues at all with them.
Yeah, that's always a good thing, because that's how the government's supposed to. It's supposed to help you instead of battle you. Sad thing is, so many state governments do battle people more than they help. No.
Well, I can agree with that. I think the state store, state system in Pennsylvania is a little combative at times, but hopefully that will change for the better.
I've talked to a few wineries in Pennsylvania so far, mm-hmm. and they're really expecting to see a major change in the state stores over the next 5 to 10 years. They expect them to expand and become much better, much mm-hmm. more consumer friendly, much more winery friendly. So maybe in our lifetime we'll see that. Who knows?
I certainly hope. It would really help the consumers. It would broaden their horizons on what all is available. They would have access to better quality wines and a wider variety rather than what the best buys are on the market.
Yeah. Well, it's just like you decide not to go through them, which
correct.
Eliminates your possibility of having a wine there that somebody may discover. And
correct.
I am sure you're not the only one.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure.
So,
a lot of wines from Chile, like the Carmenere, there'll be a lot more wines brought into the area if it's opened up a bit.
Right. So, and, it's would only help the state because everyone they sell, they get tax on it.
That's exactly right.
So, you know, it would only help.
I think it's just the age-old problem of wanting to or willing to give over control and just have faith that it will work and everybody will get along very well together.
Yeah.
It's
ideally, anyway.
Ideally. Yeah, you're right. Ideally.
Mike, do you have anything you'd like to ask Todd before he gives us off his winery information here?
Yeah, there was a couple things I wanted to mention. Real quick, the interview with Alex from the Wooden Angel was from March 28th. It was actually the 29th, but for some reason the archives are showing Wednesday the 28th. We're not on Wednesdays, but so if you want to look there. Also, when we were talking about the weather, you were talking about how the temperatures go down to, you know, 0 degrees is that's the coldest. But and then
yeah.
You mentioned hill. You need to each spring you hill up. What does hill up mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have explained that. What we do is we go through the vineyard with a tractor, and the tractor is outfitted with a plow on the side of the tractor. Rather than inverting the soil or plowing the soil, all we're doing is throwing dirt up over the graft union. So when you're done hilling up, you'll have a mound of soil right on top of the vines.
No.
And the dirt covers the soil. Acts as an insulation, and it prevents the graft union from freezing if it gets down below zero or six below zero. Now, in the springtime, what you have to do is, if you don't pull that dirt away from the graft union, the graft will send down tap roots, and the varietal, the Chardonnay, the plant that you want, will send roots down along the grafted root, and it will overtake the grafted root. The graft will die. The Chardonnay roots will become predominant, and then it will be attacked by phylloxera, and they'll die.
Wow.
So, every spring, you have to pull the dirt away from the graft union and trim off any tap roots that they put down.
Mm.
So it's very labor-intensive.
Very labor-intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to worry about hilling up if you have a lot of hybrids or native grapes, Concords, Nortons. You don't have to worry about hilling up any of those.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, I should have explained that. You probably don't do that commonly down there, do you?
No, we don't do that too often. It's just only if we're drinking wine while we're plowing, it might happen.
It might happen.
Yeah.
Actually, up around the Finger Lakes up in New York, several years they had milder climates, and the vintners got away from hilling up. And probably 8 years ago, they had 2 years with killing freezes, and they lost about a third of all their vineyards.
Wow.
Because the graft froze.
Mm.
So it's much simpler just to do it and be safe. It's cheap insurance.
Wow.
So you do it every year as a common practice?
Every year as a common practice. Hill up in the fall, take down and trim roots in the spring.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, we're unhilling our new vineyard right as we're doing our first pruning this year. And our older, more established vineyard, we typically do that June, July, when it starts drying out a bit.
Wow, you wait a long time.
Yeah, we do wait a long time because it's just so much other stuff to do in the spring. Like right now, it's a fight to do the pruning. And we do pruning in different stages up here. I don't know if you would do that in Florida. We go through, do a first pre-pruning probably the end of February to kind of get the deadwood out of the trellises. And then we come through, because we could have a lot of freezes in February and in March yet, we don't do final prunings until right now. March, April, we do final pruning. So it kind of doubles the labor on that. And then, after that, we would probably catch up to you. You do, you know, shoot positioning. You do thinning and all that stuff. So
we do most of our pruning back in February, you know.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
If we did that, we would surely lose our buds. And what we did this year, remember if I at the beginning of the show I mentioned about doing some different pruning techniques to delay bud break. What we did is we do all vertical shoot positioning. So we have, of course, the tall shoots and a canopy. Rather than cutting it back to 4 or 5 buds like you do in some years, we left about 2 feet on all the shoots. So what that does is as those vines become active, they come out of dormancy, they'll shoot all the energy into the end buds.
Right.
So you'll have more bud break at the end, which we end up cutting off. As you go down that 2-foot shoot down to the cordon or the fruiting wire, those buds are barely in bud break. So it really does help delay the bud break on the buds that we want to preserve.
Very good.
Yeah.
A question about the vineyard, since we're talking about that,
sure.
And I didn't get an opportunity. I forgot, honestly. Mm-hmm. You have, you said you put 10,000 grapes in the ground. How many acres?
10 acres.
10 acres? Wow. You got how close are your centers? What do you?
4 foot and 9 foot rows.
Wow.
Now the Cab Franc at the bottom, we did that meter spacing.
Mm-hmm. So
what's your spacing down there like?
It depends on what we're using. I mean, you know, I use a hybrid grape. I use the University of Florida hybrid grape. I don't use a muscadine.
Oh.
Muscadines grow down here like a weed. I mean, you can put those in the ground and pick them 5 years later. They're all set for you. I use a University of Florida hybrid grape.
Okay.
And so I usually do like, the vineyard that I have that got drowned during the hurricanes had 6-foot centers.
Oh, okay.
So
our first vineyard, we have 5 foot. So 5x9 is pretty common. With the new one, we went with a little bit tighter spacing.
Uh-huh. Well,
the reason being, the new site has less vigor, so we don't have to worry about having too much shoot and leaf growth. We can do a little bit tighter spacing.
Now, muscadines, they keep it around 5.
Okay.
So, it grows very, very well down here. I mean, you know, it's just we get a lot of sunshine, get the perfect afternoon rains. It doesn't always help the final product, but it gives great growth.
Now, you probably couldn't do a Riesling down there, could you? Because of it would just rot with all the humidity.
We couldn't do Rieslings because of Pierce disease.
Pierce disease, okay.
Pierce disease.
Okay. We don't have Pierce disease.
No, Pierce disease is spread I'm trying to think of the scientific name, and some of you people out there probably know this, and you'll be able to, you know, sit there screaming it out at the radio, it's called this,
doing a
Google
search.
It's called this. Pierce
doing a Google
disease,
search right now.
Xylella, Xylella. Fastodiosa.
Okay.
That's the scientific name for it. Xylella fastodiosa, or Pierce disease, and it's spread by the glassy wing sharpshooter. The vector of the Pierce disease is by the glass wing sharpshooter.
Yeah.
And the bug flies in the vineyards, infects it, and they die. We can't grow Vitis vinifera because of that. They will get Pierce disease.
Any vinifera.
University of Florida has been doing genetic research trying to come up with plants that will survive in Florida, hybrids of the vinifera, and they found about a dozen of them. These are the ones I'm using. So the Rieslings aren't going to grow. Yes, they would probably be so susceptible to all sorts of rot and everything else because of the moisture in there, but they would never get to that point. I put some decorative Cab Merlot Chardonnay on the fence around the winery when we opened, and they all died. They got affected by Pierce disease, and they died.
Oh my.
So, you can't do it. I mean, once the bug gets in there, you can't do it. So the hybrids I use have been they're resistant to Pierce disease.
Okay.
Although there's a winery not too far from me that's Strong Tower Winery, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
He put Norton in the ground, and everyone's telling him, it's going to die, it's going to die, it's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had it in the ground now for I think, 4 years. And Terry, if you're listening to this program, let me know if I'm wrong. But he sat in the ground for 4 years. Every year it tests positive to Pierce disease, and it is thriving.
Now, isn't that interesting? There's a lot of Norton up here. I didn't realize it would grow that far south.
Yeah, well, we didn't either because of Pierce disease, but it is growing. And so everyone's quite excited about what he's doing and the possibilities that he may. But it is testing positive to Pierce disease.
That's fascinating.
So so we don't know. Everyone's watching and wondering.
Mm-hmm. It might be interesting to see some crosses with the Norton to see what it could develop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, although it does test positive, it isn't dying.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So we're surprised. But yeah, Pierce disease is our major problem. I'm sure if the plants start growing and if they could grow down here, they would get ate up by just about every imaginable bug in the whole wide world, plus all sorts of rots and all sorts of fungus and all sorts of everything else because we are in Florida. But
now, isn't that fascinating? Because up here, we think about the northern states, like Michigan or whatever, oh, they're too cold. They really can't grow a lot of vines. And you think the more heat you have, like Chile, of course you'd be a lot better off. But that's just not the case.
No.
You have the humidity and other problems.
Right.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It really
is. Trade-offs. There's trade-offs.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
most of the wineries in Chile are a little bit closer to the mountains and start getting elevation.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so they grow much better there. So.
Sure. Oh, it's fascinating.
Mike, I'm sorry. We
Oh, no. I'm taking the basic wine quiz off of his website, off of trying to go through this real quick, but listening and okay, I hope I learned enough in the last. How long have we done this? Did this 4 or 3 years now? So I'm going to test this real quick. No, that's great. some of these are getting me.
Wine is fun. Wine can be fun, can it?
Yes, it is.
This interview here was more interviewing me than anyone I've ever done. I don't know about this.
Sorry. I'm inquisitive by nature.
Very good.
Todd, what have you haven't always been a vineyardist and working in wine. What is your career? What is your...
Well, I've had different careers. I actually started out a bachelor's in accounting, which I can't imagine being an accountant. No offense to anyone. I got docked so many points because my numbers went outside the boxes, and I thought, oh, my, this isn't for me. And I was in marketing radio for a while. And we have another business that we've worked for about 20 years. It's a contract cleaning company.
Oh.
And we just thought this is something that would be fun for us. And it is.
So not to pry, but no children to be part of it?
We have one daughter, but she's an attorney, and she doesn't really have a lot of interest in the winery. No attorney jokes here. That's okay.
Nice. Kept my mouth shut.
We're we're keeping our fingers crossed that our granddaughter might be interested.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Now, my brother and sister-in-law has a son, our nephew, and he worked with us in the winery for about a year and a half. And he went out to California, spread his wings a bit, worked at some wineries out there. Maybe someday he'll come back.
Wow.
Life is fun. You just never know what's around the next turn, do you?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Anything else, Mike, before I...
No. I scored an 11 on the quiz. And,
did you?
Yeah, that's good enough.
Of a possible 10?
No. It says 8. 8 to 11 is very good. You know enough to be comfortable ordering or selecting a bottle of wine. Woohoo!
All right.
So now we got to get that. We'll have Ron do that and see what I'm sure he's going to. What's the possibility? It's 12. 15, I guess, is the maximum. So
15 is the maximum.
See there, you're very well. Did very well.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Yay. Try the tougher quiz next time. But
I just looked at this. I think this is too hard.
The quiz? Okay. No, I guess that's all. That was the only question I was interested in was finding out what the hill up was, and that's interesting. It's a lot of work though, but
a lot of work. Yeah, it's very labor intensive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Well, Todd, tell us before you go.
Yes.
contact information for the winery, your webpage, your address, your email address, Facebook, Twitter, everything on there in case anybody wants to get a hold of you and yell at you for what you said today or to visit or anything else.
It's very, very simple. It's Briar Valley Winery, B as in boy, briarvalleywinery.com. We have a Facebook. It's Briar Valley Winery there also. Or you can just go to the website. It'll point you to my email address or contact information. That keeps it simple.
Phone number?
Yeah.
814-623-0900.
And you're open 7 days a week?
7 days a week. Noon to five on Saturday and Sundays.
And
we're actually right. We're in a very nice historic town, Bedford, Pennsylvania. It's the county seat. We have a tasting room right in the center of town and an old restored retail building from the 20s, tin ceiling, wood floors. It's kind of cute, really cute.
Great. That's 107 East Pitt Street.
Yes.
Where that's located.
Yes, right in the center of Bedford, Pennsylvania.
Fantastic.
Actually,
thank you, Todd.
Pitt Street is, if you've heard of historic Route 30, Route 30?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that Pitt Street is Route 30.
Oh,
if you're
okay.
Taking the Lincoln Highway, you'll go right past the winery.
Oh, that Route 30 runs right straight across Ohio and Indiana and Illinois. And,
yes, it does.
Yeah, right that yep. Across that direction.
Right through Bedford and right in front of our tasting room.
Oh, great. So if anyone wants to visit, by all means, get in touch. You can always check him out on that. And, Todd, thank you very, very much for taking the time being with us tonight. I'm glad we got you on the air. It was well worth the wait, and you were very informative, even though you asked me more questions than you for a while there.
next time I'll do better.
Can we order your stuff online? Is it possible for people? Are you very restricted because you're in Pennsylvania? What's the word?
We're very restricted. My suggestion is just shoot me an email if you'd want to try it. I'll check the ship-compliant website to see if I'm allowed to ship to Florida, and I'll just get back in touch with you.
Okay. Or anywhere else in the world. Anyone out there listening want to check out his stuff? We were talking so strongly about the Cabernet Franc, and he has one there, and maybe anyone else anywhere in the country might want to try the Cabernet Franc. Send him an email. He will be in touch.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Yeah.
Mike, thank
very
you,
good.
Too.
Thank you,
Todd. Have yourself a wonderful evening and great conversation. Thanks.
Thank you.
Very good. Oh.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
All right.
Wow. Very good.
All right.
We're still...
Is he still with us?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. Okay, there we go. Sorry.
There we go.
My thing was locking up here. Okay, I had to refresh the screen, and then he wasn't on there.
I was looking at something here, and I turned over there, and I looked, and he was still with us. You know, and so
yeah.
that was right when you flipped him out of there. So,
I flipped him out of here. Okay.
Get him out of here.
No. No. Wow.
Good.
Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Yeah, that's good. Good
fun
guess, sir. Yeah, very good. Okay, we have a few minutes. Well, yeah, I guess we have a few minutes. Did you want to cover what you wanted to cover now, or do you want to wait till next week?
I'll wait. It's
okay.
You know, I'll wait because I'm going to spend a little bit more time with it and all that. And I was just putting it as a background here. Well, I'll wait.
Okay. Tune in next week.
Yeah, wait. You know, just a little teaser there. You know,
yes.
If you're listening on archives, I was talking while you were getting Todd on the phone. Boy, you had problems getting him in. You finally got him on a number we didn't even have.
Yeah. I ended up calling him on an alternate number, and then he gave me this number to call him. So, yeah, that was good, though.
Worked out well, though. We finally got every time I looked to see, and then he dropped again. I'm going, oh, no. While you were trying to get Todd on there, I was telling listeners, archive, live, whatever, drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. If there's anything that you'd like to see us talk about or anything you'd like to see us do or anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, get in touch with us. So, and
yeah,
that's it. We have a festival this Saturday.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, here's whatever voice that is that I use to tell us more about it.
Your radio voice.
Well, it's a different one. It's kind of slowed down and lowered. Actually, what happens is I take the – well, never mind. I'll tell you later. All right, here we go. Coming up this Saturday, it's a Wine Fest, April 14th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Here's the information. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Like to see everyone out there this Saturday. If you're in the area, by all means, come out and see us.
The weather's going to be beautiful.
Gorgeous,
it's just that time of year when people should be coming to Florida, and they're just usually heading back home. So,
yeah. That's true.
Spring is done, and so they head back, and they miss out on some of this. But, yeah, it's going to be great. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday, April 14th. So head out there. You've got a lot of vendors, and it's going to be a great time. So, okay, very cool. What else?
I guess you all out there. Something else I was going to ask you about. Oh, before I forget, the opening, listen to it, because I heard some cracking on one of the things that people were saying is like it faded out. So before I forget it, double check the opening.
Oh, I was tuned in. I didn't.
You didn't hear it?
No.
I did on this end. Might have been my microphone, too, was going out. Might have been the whole thing acted up. So.
Okay.
That's possible.
I don't know.
So
I'll
just
try
let you know. I'll forget if I don't tell you now on the air, and we get off and I forget about it. So
yeah.
I'll tell you now. Okay. Next week, we have ourselves a guest already. His name's going to be Mike Wilson. He's from the Vineyards at Hershey. We already talked to the winemaker of Vineyard at Hershey, Paul, who was on last week. Well, Mike Wilson is the promo guy for there. He's done all the promotion and getting everybody in and all that stuff. And he's formed all sorts of a group of wineries around there and everything. I talked to him on the phone. He's all excited about coming on, talking to us about it. I'm excited about him because we're going to throw some questions at him about the graphics of wine drinking people and who is drinking and how to promote wineries and different things like that. So that will be next week with Mike Wilson from the Vineyards at Hershey. So tune in then.
Very good. That's April 19th. And Thursday, that's Thursday. We're not on Wednesdays. I don't know why the archive, I was looking at it when I was trying to find the date for the show that I think Todd would be interested in.
Alex.
Yeah, and I looked at it and I go, we weren't on Wednesday, and like four or five shows are showing Wednesday's date. Yeah, which is strange because my show notes, I show March 29th, Thursday, and Blog Talk Radio is showing Wednesday the 28th. So
that's odd.
That's not right. So we'll see what's going on there. But it'll be April the 19th. We are on Thursdays. So it'll be 7 p.m. Eastern time, Eastern Daylight Time, 7 p.m. on Thursday. The next show is April the 19th. So catch us live and talk with our special guest. Love to have you on the program. Like you said, Mike Wilson next week, all about marketing. I think you told me before he was the marketing director, Vineyards at Hershey. So talk about social networking and the marketing effects in the wineries and everything. And so it'll be a big deal. So very good. And tonight was as well. And, you know, we obviously enjoy having our guest on. So I guess we can we'll close the show down for tonight. And
right.
That was something I forgot to do in the last 7 days was recreate the ending. But
did you? Oh.
Yeah,
Well, we still got the one up there, don't we? Throw the ending up there, and we'll say goodbye to people live and throw the ending, and we'll be done.
Yeah, we'll see you all next Thursday. Thank you all for listening, as it'll say as well.
Yeah, thank you all for listening. Appreciate it. Yeah. Love to hear from you. See you next week.
All right, have a good week, and next Thursday. All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.